Everything advances the emotional plot. Everything advances the plotty plot. Everything advances the action. It all moves together in one direction, building on this theme of Miles discovering what he's capable of and who he is, and receiving love.
We all know the truth. More connects us than separates us. But in times of crisis, the wise build bridges, while the foolish build barriers.
You raise walls, I destroy them. Let's see who prevails.
Just because something works doesn't mean that it cannot be improved.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit.
It's the only way to be sure.
Allow my sword to join you in the fight against evil.
The world needs us to chase dreams.
We have to dedicate ourselves each and every single day to this fight because I can't do it alone.
You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Welcome to the Skippy and Fanty Show. Today we're doing At the Movies.
One last time, let's take it from the beginning.
Amazing.
It was beautiful.
We'll be looking at Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and it's going to be great.
Yes.
I'm Becca.
I'm Alex.
I'm Julia.
And I'm Steven.
Oh, God, and I'm so excited right now. I'm sorry. I just can't contain myself.
Welcome to the show. Alex, start us off with our synopsis.
All right. So, if you're like the one human being in the entire world who has not seen the amazing trailer for this movie, first off, you should go watch the trailer, and then you should, like, go watch the movie. But this is basically what you're looking at is Miles Morales is a typical teenage kid in New York City, and he's going to, like, a special school that he doesn't really want to go to. That's for super smart kids. And then there's, like, a super collider MacGuffin thingy in the middle of New York City that causes the multiverse to kind of be opened up. And while this is going on, Miles gets the powers of Spider-Man, and then other spider people start showing up because not only is it that there are the multiverses that are kind of being able to leak into Miles's Earth, but it's bad. And if the collider gets turned on again, everything's going to explode, and that would also be bad. So Miles has to learn how to be Spider-Man and team up with the other spider people and do what spider people do.
Ha! I like it. Alrighty, so, general impressions. Who wants to go first?
I'll go!
Okay.
Oh my god! Okay, so basically, I watched a not small number of movies last year, and this is the best movie that I saw all year. And that's even including Black Panther, which I thought was going to be the best movie that I saw all year. And then I saw this one. And oh my god, it's amazing, and it's wonderful, and I've seen it in the theater 3 times, and I would totally go and see it again. And you have to understand what a big deal this is coming from me, because I don't like animated movies for the most part. So that I'm, like, losing my shit over an animated movie is just, like, unheard of. But it's so good. And, it's so good. It's so good. It's like, heartfelt and happy. It made me laugh, and it made me cry, and, it's so good.
Okay, so I only saw 2 movies last year, because I'm a broke grad student, and the 2 movies I saw were Black Panther and this movie, and hot. Diggity dang.
Good choices.
This movie was the best movie ever. Oh my gosh. It's beautiful. The animation style blew my mind. The soundtrack, I've been listening to it for the last 2 weeks. Oh, this movie was amazing, and I wish I could see it every damn day. Next person?
Okay. So, I loved this movie very, very much. I saw several movies last year. This is definitely in my top. I can't decide whether I like it or Black Panther more because Black Panther was also amazing. So I think my only solution is that I'm going to have to watch both of them multiple times in the future to decide.
That sounds like a good plan.
Such a hardship.
Mm-hmm. Very hard. I loved so much about this movie. I was worried, longtime listeners of this show will know that I am a migraine sufferer and that bright lights and flashing lights trigger migraines for me. I'd heard from people that this movie had a lot of flashing lights and was a problem for people with epilepsy. That's usually a sign that it's a problem for me. So I was really wary, and at first I wasn't even going to see it at all. And then literally everyone in the world kept telling me how awesome it was, and I was like, fine, I'm just going to go, and if I have to close my eyes for all of it, I'll close my eyes for all of it. And I was really worried at the very beginning because the opening, like the pre-opening credits Marvel comic book page flipping thing was a problem for me. And that's pretty common. Like a lot of times opening flippy, flashy things are a problem. So I was worried that this was going to be a problem. Once I got into the movie, there were actually very few points where I had to close my eyes. So this was amazing. I did not come out of it with a migraine. It has a beautiful animation style, and something that I personally really appreciated, and I want to say, like, before we ever throw up a spoiler wall for anyone else who's out there who's worried about this kind of thing, is that I found it to actually be a very gentle style of animation for the most part. So I was actually able to watch it, and I would encourage people not to be scared of that.
That's awesome.
So we were, just before we started recording, the joke was that I was going to be the dark horse who actually hated the movie and was here to bring it down for everyone. But, I'm happy to tell you that's not the case. I see very few movies because time is a thing, and I've seen very few of the big superhero movies, particularly, which sometimes surprises people because I write about comics. So I've missed out on a lot of the MCU, for instance, for a whole bunch of reasons, not just because of time, but because I had some ethical concerns about Marvel before they were acquired by Disney, and it was a thing. I have since gotten over those ethical concerns because they addressed those ethical concerns, which is wonderful. So now I've seen Black Panther, I've seen Thor Ragnarok, and I've seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and it is one of the best movies I've seen in years. It is one of the best superhero movies of all time. It captures the moral dimension of Marvel Comics at their best in a way that I have not seen done and that I thought was absolutely beautiful. It's smart, it's hearty, it's just absolutely amazing.
Yes,
I want to agree again with you on the, like, the capturing the moral heart.
Mm-hmm.
Really kind of going back to the classic idea of superheroes as sort of like role models that are also like the every person, but you can also look up to their decision making things because they're choosing to do the right thing. And we don't see that as much in superhero movies these days, but this really returned to that and also was still like very fresh and modern. And I really loved that.
Yeah. And I do want to say, since this is not a spoiler, like, you know, me freaking out about, oh my God, like, it's an animated movie that I actually liked. I think part of the reason, like, the animation is amazing. And if you go look on Twitter, there's all these really cool little tweet threads and all that talking about different technical things that they did in the animation that makes it look the way it does that are just, like, mind-blowing. But I think that I liked it because, especially when there's just like so many kind of like 3D animated movies out there right now, and I really don't care for any of them, which, you know, if you do, this is not a judgment on you. This is just like my taste. But like, this movie embraced so hard that it was a comic book movie and that it was an animated movie. And it did things that I have never seen another animated film do, because it was like, hey, I'm animated, I can do some weird shit, or, you know, like, I'm gonna embrace some amazing comic book tropes, like, you know, little thought bubbles. And God, it's really cool what it does, where it feels like it's not just I'm telling you a story through a particular medium. It's really stretching the bounds of that medium and making the medium part of the story itself.
100%.
Okay. I think we should put up the spoiler wall.
Before we do that, I want to say one more thing about it that's super not a spoiler.
Cool.
That is that one of the things that I love about this movie is that it really, because it shows all of these different versions of what a spider person could be, we get the sense that literally anyone could be Spider-Man.
Yes.
This means people of color. This means people of all genders. This means any kind of being could be Spider-Man. And I love that that opens it up. I love that that like gives every kid out there who watches it this the possibility to imagine themselves as a superhero plausibly. And the fact that it like really centers on Miles's story, and Miles is a mixed race person of color in Brooklyn, which is awesome.
Yes.
Yes. Very much yes. All of that.
Okay. Dear listeners, spoilers abound.
Go watch the movie if you haven't already, or even if you have.
Yeah, just go watch it.
Just go watch it again and then come back.
Because it'll just make you happy in your heart.
It really will. Oh God, it's so good.
Okay.
Specific impressions, guys. Let's do this.
Oh God, I don't even know where to start because it's just like so many things.
You gotta start somewhere.
Okay, the Prowler.
Oh my God, yes.
Like,
that reveal was stunning.
It really was.
Right? Because I feel like, you know, especially because I am like a giant MCU fan and all that, at least for kind of the cinematic stuff, I've become very inured to certain tropes and I'm like, oh, I know what to expect about certain things. And yet somehow I did not see that coming. And and it hurt me, like in my stomach. It hurt. I was aww, like, oh God, Miles. Right.
Uncle Aaron, no.
Right? Excuse me while I ugly sob in a corner.
Yes, exactly.
And I mean, oh my God. And just kind of like the parallel of what Aaron says to Miles, you know, like, you know, you're the best of us. And then what Miles' dad says to Miles after Aaron dies.
Oh, no. And that was such like a stunning pull together of like traditional familial relationships, because it was obvious that Aaron was like the black sheep of the family, and he was still one of Miles's favorite people in the whole world, and like it turned out that he was doing something that could get Miles really hurt, but at the very end he was like, no, I'm not gonna hurt my nephew. I love this kid. I tried to help raise this kid as best as I could. I tried to give him creative outlets, like, and then he just gets shot for no reason.
Oh man.
There were reasons, but there were tears as well.
Well, it's just all that complexity with Aaron, just because, you know, it's kind of like in that moment, you know, it's like tragic. And then I still kept thinking, I was like, and yeah, you would have totally fucking killed Miles if he hadn't been Miles.
Yeah. If he hadn't been Miles, that kid would have been dead.
Right.
The thing that I really liked about this whole arc, that I found really interesting and compelling, and I really liked the way that they handled it in the end, was that it's also all tied up in Miles' father's hatred of Spider-Man. So Miles' father is a cop. He feels like vigilante justice is not the right way to go, and he doesn't like that these superheroes just swoop in and do whatever they think is right mm-hmm. without consulting the law or whatever. And so there's this whole conversation that they're having throughout the movie about, like, do you hate Spider-Man? And he's like, kind of. And then Miles is Spider-Man, and he's like, do you still hate Spider-Man? And he's having a lot of conflicts around that. And then Uncle Aaron turns out to be the Prowler, and Miles is there when Aaron dies. And then he feels like, you know, this is another layer of complex emotional landscape. And then when his father, like, learns that Spider-Man is responsible for the Prowler's death, which isn't exactly true, but you can see it that way. He's like, okay, Dad can extra hate me now because I'm Spider-Man and Spider-Man is responsible for killing my uncle. And by the end of the movie, they come around plausibly to Dad seeing more of what's happening and realizing that Miles is Spider-Man and that everything is complicated and that he and his son are very different, and his son is never going to be him. And also, he still loves his brother, even though his brother was doing bad things. And he's still sad that his brother has died, but he also doesn't blame Miles, and he doesn't blame Spider-Man. And I thought that the whole arc was just so complex and moving because of the complexity.
What I loved is that the movie was just so unafraid to let characters change in a very permanent way. And that's part of it where, you know, Miles' dad has such a clear arc that's kind of defined by his sort of relationship to Spider-Man. And at the end, he's still kind of being like, well, you know, I don't approve of your methods, but... But I mean, like, when I compare that to, say, like, MCU, all the amazing shit that happened in Thor Ragnarok, and then Infinity War, and that's all I'm going to say about that, because that is not, this is a happy podcast. But, like, in this, where they were, like, willing to just be like, no, it's permanent, you know, Miles' relationship with his dad has permanently changed. We've permanently changed the fact that Miles is Spider-Man in this thing, because we killed Peter Parker, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, right away, too, it was like, the first thing is Peter Parker's dead.
Pine Parker.
Apparently, in, like, production, to, like, differentiate which Peter they were talking about, they called him R.I. Peter. Oh, and then they called Peter B. Parker Burrito Peter.
Oh my god.
So just like, alright Peter, alright Peter.
That is legitimate though. I mean, he is Burrito Peter.
He is. He's, yes.
Or Pizza Peter, really.
Mm. And I'm,
yeah. He's got a little bit of gut. Wears sweatpants.
Oh, but broken down hobo Spider-Man was so good though, and I love that basically his whole arc was getting taught to get his shit together by Miles.
It was so great! Because normally it's like the father figure teaching the son figure, and this time it was like, no, you're gonna listen to me. I'm your son and you should do better.
Yes. I mean, seriously, because it was just like, you know, Miles being like, man, you have to deal with your stuff. You have to stop running away. And I was just like, Miles, you're so good.
And then Gwen Stacy having to talk Peter out of talking to MJ when, oh my gosh, that was amazing.
Oh, that was a heartbreaker.
Yeah, the one thing that I found slightly implausible about this movie was how fast the MJ in Miles-verse seems to have gotten over Peter's death.
Yeah.
Because, like, by the end, when Peter, Burrito Peter, is, like, randomly saying things to her at the gala dinner, when she's like, it's just bread, I just want more bread. She seems to not actually be grieving her husband at that point. And I'm sort of like, he just died, though, like, last week.
Yeah, because you think it would be kind of rough on her to be like, hey, lady, your husband died, so let's put you in a banquet where they're all dressed up like him. Woo!
Yeah, like, there's a bunch of waitstaff dressed like your dead husband who died last week. Happy death time.
Hey, right? Well, that whole scene actually was, I mean, that was obviously, I understand why they did it for plot reasons. That was one of my few caveats with the whole movie, because surely MJ knows that Kingpin is a really bad guy.
One would think.
You know, this is an alternate universe where Aunt May is right up to her neck in all the spider stuff. Presumably MJ is too. And she's like letting Kingpin throw a banquet?
Like, so my question, though, is whether that MJ does know any of it, because, like, she never shows up at Aunt May's house, and, like, Peter's, Aunt May is Peter's only surviving, like, family.
Yeah.
You'd think that the week after MJ's husband died, she'd be hanging out with the family, right?
Yeah. There is some plausible deniability surrounding the fact that his shed is in Aunt May's backyard.
That's true.
We see so little of MJ, and... we never get to see her when she's not being, like, public MJ, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, impossible to draw, really, any conclusions.
I mean, don't forget that MJ is canonically a performer in you know, all her various incarnations. She's an actor and a model, and she's used to putting on a face in public, so...
That's true. She does, however, like, know that he's Spider-Man, it seems, because when that reveal happens, when he dies, and that's, like, televised, and it's like, oh, Peter Parker, a grad student, was Spider-Man, like, so she knows that.
Also, I take umbrage with the fact that as a grad student, he's, like, filthy rich, but okay.
It's that Spidey Bells money.
Oh my god!
Oh, yeah, because in this universe, Spider-Man recorded a Christmas album.
Oh, God.
There it is. There's your big spoiler. That's the only thing you need to go. Good night, folks.
But the song is so funny just when it gets to the line where it's like, why did I agree to do this album? I have a degree in chemical engineering.
Yes.
I lost it.
So yeah, the soundtrack for this movie was great. Oh my gosh. I've been listening to it for 2 weeks straight. Like, all the little things that they slipped in there, it was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, low-key favorite character, more like high-key, Spider-Man Noir.
Yes!
Nicolas Cage.
Oh my God.
Is a gift. He's a gift.
Nick Cage finally gets to play Spider-Man.
Nicolas Cage having way too much fun. I don't know what this is, but I will.
But I want it. Yeah. Like, all the voice actors in this movie did an incredible job. Recording like that has to be hard. And wow. You've got good, like, group dynamic. All the voices were, like, on point. Spider-Ham is...
Oh, my God.
John Mulaney is my favorite comedian. And hearing that he recorded 2.5 hours of audio that they couldn't use because he didn't ask for 2 hours whether or not what the movie was rated, when they told him it was PG-13, he was like, you can't use anything I've said. And they were like, nope.
Didn't they also kind of have to do that with Nick Cage, too, where he was saying some, like, incredibly dirty shit?
Well, Spider-Man Noir, like, in the comics, he's such a dark character. Like, he shoots people. Like, he kills people. And, I mean, yeah, they had to dumb it down for a kids movie, but he kills people with guns. Come on. It was the best.
Does he let matches burn down to his fingertips just so he can feel something?
Oh, but also Penny Parker from the future with her robot. So good.
I loved her.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, the first time I watched the movie, I actually missed out, like, one important piece of information on her, because I didn't realize that it was, like, her dad had built that robot. So then when it got to the end, and, you know, like, she saved the little spider out of it, but the robot was toast, and she was crying, and I was kind of like, I don't get it. And then when I watched it again, I was like, oh.
Yeah, I saw this movie twice in theaters. Once, like, the week it came out, and then once on January 2nd, so it could be the first movie I saw in 2019. And yeah, Penny's story just, like, breaks me.
Oh, man.
Because, like, she's all alone, and all she has is this robot and her tiny little spider. But she's such a boss.
Yeah. I mean, I got to see the movie, like, for the second time. I got to see it with Alistair Stewart and just got to enjoy the pleasure of watching him just lose his shit as he was watching the movie because he was having so much fun.
That must have been amazing. My favorite... not actually part of the movie thing that happened when I was watching this movie was that I saw it in a crowded local theater. There was a child who was maybe like 7 years old in this theater. And this child was just like occasionally providing their own snark commentary, which was amazing. So like there's the point where Miles is in his school and he has met Gwen and he's like super into her and he tries to do the shoulder touch that Uncle Aaron has taught him and it goes very badly and he's like, hey. So when he goes, hey, and this little 7 year old says, nice try.
Oh my God.
And then like later in the movie when it's like climactic time and the collider's going and deadbeat hobo Peter is going back to his universe and Miles is like, I got this. Peter's like, I have to go back. And the kid's like, bye.
Oh, man.
It was amazing. Like when this happened, normally I'm like, no, people don't talk during this movie. This kid, like, everybody in the theater was just like, oh, sick burn.
Oh, man.
I wish they'd taken advantage more of, like, meme culture and, like, how different the memes must be between the Spider-Verses.
Mm.
Oh.
Well, that could be interesting.
That has to go in the sequel.
It would have been great. So, like, another little tiny detail that I love. This movie is so good on tiny, tiny details. There's a point where... they're like running through the evil science lab and they're trying to get the computer out of there And the people in the cafeteria notice that they're the wrong people, and they're like, they were stealing bagels!
Yes!
And yeah. There's, like, one frame where there's, like, a comic book bagel explosion.
Yeah.
It says, like, bagel! Exclamation point. Because he hits him with a bagel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my god, the bagel sound effect.
Bagel!
Oh god. I just loved how, like, that whole thing, you know, we started out and it was like, oh, this is Hobo Peter's plan. And at the end, he's like, and then I get a butt bagel.
Yes. But also step three, re-examine my personal biases, was like, yes, please. So he like goes through this whole plan and he's just like, one, two, three, re-examine my personal biases. And it made me like swoon in the theater.
Well, and okay, so I'm still kind of wondering about this. So when we learn that Doc Ock is a woman, which is just like the greatest thing, but you know, she's like, well, my friends call me Liv. And then Aunt May calls her Liv.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's up with that?
Yes.
This Aunt May has done some shit. I am absolutely convinced.
Yes. This Aunt May has seen stuff.
I mean, Julia, I gotta say, the minute I heard Aunt May and I was like, oh my god, this fucking Lily Tomlin, I thought of you.
God, she's so good. She's amazing. I love her.
I said, take it outside!
Yes.
I saw somebody's fan art, and I wish I'd screenshotted it so I could tell you who, but they were like, right before Peter went back through the portal, he said, don't let my Aunt May marry anybody named Dr. Octopus. And I would have died.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Yeah, you can see it too. I mean, like, I bet, yeah. So like, she's just evil, but she's probably a good date.
She seems like a lot of fun. She's got a bit of like a granola thing going with her hair, you know, like.
Yeah.
Kind of like, hippie. I ride a bike to work.
I bet she has really good conversational skills.
Mm-hmm. She's always got interest in, like, oh, what did you do today, honey? Oh, this is what I did at work. I subjugated a nation. It's fine. With my robo-spiders.
And, like, she could probably super entertainingly talk about how horrible dudes are to women in science.
Oh, god, yeah. I want this Doc Ock's origin story.
That would be cool.
Mm. Although that whole complete indifference to making the multiverse break down was kind of a turnoff for me.
Yeah, that's the thing. She's super evil. Yeah. So, like, you're like, oh, actually, you're super evil. And eventually, that's going to, like, eat away at your attraction. But mm-hmm. I bet, like, to start out with, it's like, well, she's pretty awesome. And then it's like, oh, but you actually literally just want to destroy everything.
Yeah.
You know what? I accept that. Over time, it's an overtime thing. I would start off thinking she was really cool, too.
Okay, but let's talk about the main villain here. Kingpin.
Kingpin.
Oh my gosh.
Kingpin and his toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how right. That is, again, like, really the problem with everything in this movie.
Yeah, everything is caused by toxic masculinity and an inability to talk about your damn feelings.
Uh-huh.
And one thing I thought was really, aside from the toxic masculinity thing, was, like, the character design of Kingpin, where he is just, like, a wall with a face.
Yeah.
Well, that was super interesting because that, of course, is legendary comics artist Bill Sienkiewicz's Kingpin design.
Oh.
Which appears in graphic novels like some of Frank Miller's Daredevil and Elektra stuff, which they worked on together. So that's it's a direct visual homage, and the flashback scenes, Kingpin's happy flashback family memories, are also all done in Bill Sienkiewicz's sort of painterly style. It was a really fascinating choice, and like really beautiful, and worked perfectly for Kingpin, and I was just so excited to see it. And it's like one of the amazing strengths of the movie. It's like, you know what, this character design over here in this style, we'll put him into this movie in this style, and it works fine.
That's really cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, because it does, like, every character is in a slightly different style, and even when you see the different, like, Brooklyns, they're all in, like, a different kind of style. Like, with the Kingpin thing, I was mostly just like, where the style just kind of communicated that, like, he is a big guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that is kind of, like, part of his thing is he's just, like, a big, super intimidating guy, but it was never, like, making him a fat joke. Which I really appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that, that's really important. And, like, again, with the complex sort of, like, making, he's obviously doing a lot of crime, which is bad. And the reason that he's doing this particular thing, though, is because his crime made his family leave him, and then they got into an accident and died. And he wants that back, but also he's a villain and terrible, so he wants that back, and he wants them to fall into line and be the people that he thinks they should be.
Mm-hmm. And then he tries to get them back, and he does the exact same thing, and threatens to kill a Spider-Man, and they leave. And he never sees them again.
And it's very clear that, like, in other dimensions, his family, his wife in particular, is like, this doesn't seem okay, I have to leave.
Yeah. The women have a lot of integrity in this film.
I mean, not Liv, though.
Not Liv. But, like, the other ones.
Well, no, but she does. She absolutely has integrity. It's just, you know, she's very mono-focused on her goal. She wants to open up dimensional portals and possibly destroy the multiverse and have four cybernetic arms, and she achieves her goals with integrity.
Her villain's, like, suit is, like, it's hot.
Okay, like, the inflatable tentacle thing is really interesting.
Yeah.
No, I was just kind of wondering, like, if you... It'd be interesting to go through the film and kind of try to do an analysis, kind of looking at the whole, the idea of letting go, because there's so much imagery, particularly for the spider people, around, you know, like, letting go, making the leap of faith.
Acknowledging your trauma and letting it fade.
Yeah, and then compare that to, like, Kingpin, where his entire motivation is that he can't let go of his family or... anything, to be honest. Because, I mean, like, one of the most powerful, like, images after Miles is, like, I'm going to be Spider-Man, is when he's up on that building and he lets go of it and the glass breaks behind him.
Yeah, because he hasn't quite let go, but he's trying.
Yes.
Ugh. Yeah.
Chills.
Or consider that Miles has his, you know, one of his great transformative heroic moments after his father lets him go.
Mm.
After he basically receives his father's absolute unconditional love, he's able to access his powers in a way that he couldn't before.
Oh, God. And then, like, Miles's dad is sort of like a contrast of non-toxic masculinity, I guess, compared to, like, Kingpin, where he's like, the only way I cannot lose Miles is to let him be his own person and just, you know, say, I love you no matter what.
Yeah, and I love that Miles has two functional, loving parents. They're a very good family. And his mother is, like, obviously a good person who is working together with his father to parent this child who has been somewhat difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they clearly love him, and they're working hard to try to make sure that he has a healthy home environment, and they love each other, and that's great, because how often do we have to have parents dead or missing or neglectful in order to have children be able to do awesome things in movies? And in this case, like, nope, we just have, like, a really good loving family and a kid who's got his own stuff to deal with.
And I also just really love, so Miles's mom is Latinx and his dad is African American, and he is obviously fluent in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they make that very clear. They put it on the screen for you. Like, he is fluent. He is a multicultural kid and he owns it.
Yeah, I love that. I also find, like, so I find it fascinating, what is his roommate thinking? Because his school that he's going to is, like, a boarding school, and he's only staying there for the weekdays because he lives in Brooklyn, so it's close enough that he can just kind of, like, come home on the weekends. But, like, he has a roommate who he mostly doesn't meet for the first part of the movie, and then, like, the roommate witnesses all kinds of superhero hijinks.
Do animals talk in this universe? I don't want to freak him out. Again, John Mulaney, love him to death. Spider-Ham had such a unique animation that was so true to cartoons, and then he gives Miles the hammer, it'll fit in your pocket, and I fell in love.
It was so good. I do kind of like at the end, like, you kind of get the little, just the image of Miles kind of, yeah, meeting his roommate. I don't know, his roommate probably just thought he was having, like, a bad trip for about 48 hours.
Well, right. I mean, he's obviously sleep deprived. The guy stayed up all night. So, like, he obviously does it on the regular. He had, like, you know, instant noodle at 2 a.m.
I mean, you have to wonder what he thought, even, like, the first thing where Miles is starting to manifest his powers and he kind of, like, tears up the comics and destroys the room just by accident because he can't stop sticking to things.
My roommate, like, tore up my comics. What? That was $5. Comics are expensive.
Darn it, Morales.
Who's Morales? Anyways, I can just pull quotes out my ass all day. So...
there's so many good little when he goes and does the art with Uncle Aaron, and it's that no expectations.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There's so much in there, just like Miles versus what he feels like his parents expect from him versus he doesn't know what to expect from himself.
Versus what Aaron will give him and, like, teach him.
And how all of this also ties into, like, the fact that he's not doing well in school. He's in this, like, smart kid school. He's not doing well there. He doesn't want to be there. And the teacher is, like, not willing to give up on him. And is like, no, you have to do this assignment again. And here's, like, another essay that you have to make. And the fact that, like, Miles is really... he's obviously a smart kid. He's obviously a creative kid. And art is something that really appeals to him, which is not, again, not something that we necessarily always see in a superhero. It's like, this is not just a jock kind of kid. This is a kid who has a lot of inner introspective life and creative expression type stuff going on. And I love that that like really works into everything about his superhero identity.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's nice to see like a character that's an artist. You know, I cannot speak to comics because I don't really read that much, but like compared to say, you know, like the MCU movies and all that, there is definitely a giant boner in those movies for like engineers and scientists.
Mm-hmm.
So to see
plus gods and kings.
Well, yeah, but so to see a kid that is like specifically an artist get to be Spider-Man is really cool. Well, and I mean Gwen.
Oh gosh, Gwen.
She's in a band,
and she dances ballet, which I will admit I was a little weirded out by her toe shoes, but I'm just guessing it's a thing.
It's just a thing that she does. She has a really good comic out right now that's being written by Shauna Maguire.
I have heard.
It's like one of the few Marvel things I'm actually reading right now.
That's a good recommendation.
Yeah, so I will say one more thing about a specific impression about this movie that isn't just mine, but also I saw this with some other people and everyone agreed that this was a rare superhero movie in today's age where like none of us felt bored by any of the action sequences. We always felt like any time there was a chase or a fight that it had, like, it didn't stop the plot to have it. It was always, like, actually relevant, and there was stuff going on that was both visually interesting and also sort of emotionally and plot relevant.
And I didn't feel like I was being forced to watch the billionth fight scene in an hour.
Right, because I feel like we've gotten into a place with a lot of these movies where we kind of just, like, we have some talking and then we stop everything and the Avengers destroy an entire city in the name of superheroism. And no one particularly cares later that this has happened. Sometimes they mention it in next movies and they're like, you guys destroyed a lot of property, but then they go on to destroy a lot more property and no one cares.
Well, and it's definitely got like this thing where when they do have action, it is also almost always relevant to the character.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the stuff that Gwen does is very Gwen, and it tells you more about Gwen because she's like, and now I'm going to do a thing in, you know, toe shoes. Or like especially the Spider-Ham stuff. It's like, you know, very much tells you about the character and the place he's from. And Penny Parker, all of her action stuff is very different from everyone else, which I also really like because, I mean, especially the live action stuff, it does get very samey. Like,
it does, but like the whole heist of the computer from the Kingpin lab, and then like the chase where they're like, Miles is still trying to learn how to be a Spider-Man and he doesn't know how to do the web thing, and that's like a big part of that, and they're having this conversation and they're trying to teach him at the same time they're trying to get away from all this stuff, and stuff is going on. And that is the kind of action sequence that could very easily just be like, now we stop everything so that we can go into an action sequence where we try to steal a computer and it doesn't work and then we have a fight. But they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's true. And I think it's really one of the amazing things about the movie that everything works structurally on so many levels, right? Everything advances. It's not just the action scenes. Everything advances the emotional plot. Everything advances the plotty plot. Everything advances the action. It all moves together in one direction, building on this theme of, you know, Miles discovering what he's capable of and who he is and receiving love and that carrying him forward. And that's in all the scenes. It's in everything. And it's so different from the, you know, save the cattiness of so many modern movies. It's wonderful.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. And I feel like that's what makes the heart of this sort of like the moral heart of it that we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast come through so well, is that it never wavers from caring about all of the characters and caring about where they are in their emotional journey.
Very much. I totally agree.
And at the same time, the action is also really fun. Like, it's really fun to watch.
Yeah. The animation style that they worked with did it so well. Because they, like, flipped back from, like, what you would see on a comic book page to what you are expecting from an animated movie. And they combine it in such a way that it looks brand new. And it's amazing.
I also like that all of the spider people had things to learn from each other. So the fact that this happened and they all came to this place changed all of them.
Yeah. And I really liked the mechanic of them glitching.
Yes.
That was fascinating to me. And like, it was obviously painful. It happened in the middle of fights. It was, they couldn't control it or change it or stop it in any way. And it was such a great, these people don't belong in this universe. Miles has to own up and like be a spider person so that he can get them home.
Yeah, he has to do that because it's up to him to save them. And it's really cool to see how he comes into that even when they're like convinced that he can't.
Well, then he kind of runs up against Hobo Peter being like, no, I totally want to do the thing. And it's not even that I don't believe you can do the thing. It's because I don't want to go home and face the emotionally difficult choices.
Mm-hmm. Talk about letting go and having to actually let go of letting go of denying responsibility for everything, which is what that Peter was doing.
Mm-hmm. That whole thing was so good. Because it challenges that kind of, there's so much of like the heroic self-sacrifice narrative that you get in superhero stuff, right? Where like, you know, character A will go die because it's for the greater good. And it's kind of nice to see that get challenged with the, like, at least in this context, letting yourself die is taking the easy way out in a way that allows him to feel like, you know, he's the good guy instead of going home and actually trying to be the good guy in all senses.
Yeah, yeah. But yes, I think like the best thing about this movie is that there's so much in it that you can watch it and you can just have like a great time, and it will make you laugh and it will make you smile. And at the end of it, though, and at the heart of it all the way through, is this feeling of hope for humanity.
Yes.
This idea that like we all have it inside ourselves to be our best selves, and we should be our best selves. And that is what this is telling all of the spider people, which they all have to learn that from each other. And that is what it is telling all of us who are watching it. And it leaves you with this sense that, like, that's actually possible. We can do that.
Yes. It's so good. In exactly that way.
Which, like, personally, in today's geopolitical climate, is a message that I need, and I feel like a lot of other people probably also need, because it's so easy to feel like everybody's just going to devolve into terribleness. And this idea that, like, no, everybody inside them has the ability to be a better person, and we all can do this, and if we all do this, like, things get better.
Mm-hmm. Where it is just like, oh, well, I mean, you know, it ends with that quote from Stanley that made me cry like a little baby.
Oh, it was beautiful.
I think it's because it's there. This film does not have a cynical bone in its body. And so much media runs on kind of like cynicism and the idea that good people aren't emotionally complex or good people can't be interesting. It's a movie that believes in itself.
Yeah, and the heart of it is love. Like, the end of Miles's arc is telling the officer, hey, officer, I love you.
Yeah! in that amazing fake accent.
He hugs his dad as Miles Morales Spider-Man and says, I love you.
He's out. Thank you for your service.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And then when he's showing off to all the crowds, like, oh, it's Spider-Man, and he almost falls off the building.
Yes!
That's part of the move. That's part of the move.
Oh my god.
Okay, sounds like we're moving towards final thoughts and grades, so who wants to go first?
I'll go first since I went first for the initial thoughts. I love this movie. It is the best movie I saw all year. It's probably been the best movie I've seen in several years. Though, of course, Black Panther and Thor Ragnarok have a special place in my heart, and, you know. But it's just, it's so good, and it's so earnest, and it's a movie that wants you to be a good person and believes that you can do it. So, oh, I believe that you can be good cats, too.
Your cat agrees, which is awesome.
Yeah, so it gets an A+ from me. If there was a higher grade than an A+, I'd give it that.
Yeah, this movie was... This is officially my favorite Marvel movie. It was so good. It had such a good message. The animation blew me away. The soundtrack was amazing. Again, for like the third time. I'm still listening to it 2 weeks later. Like, I love... This movie had such a great feeling that it makes me want to take that feeling into the rest of this year. And I cannot wait to see where they go with this. Yeah, I'm gonna give it an A+ too. Like, it deserves no less.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there are a couple of things that I have some questions about, like particularly MJ's knowledge of Spider-Man and grief arc was a little bit head scratchy. I also noticed that, like, this didn't really have the thing that makes me kind of waver on whether I like this or Black Panther as the best movie that I saw in 2018 is that Black Panther had a ton of really strong Black women who were doing awesome things. And this did not. Miles's mother is not a Black woman. And I don't really think we see Black women in this movie, which is interesting considering like who it's centered on and where it's based, which is, again, like not all movies need to be all things to all people, and that's okay. But it kind of like makes me think like one of the things that I love so much about Black Panther is how much it shows all the different kinds of ways that you can be an awesome Black superhero and or mastermind scientist. And that is super great. That said, the message of it, the sincerity of it, the look and feel of it, everything about it was wonderful and I loved it. And I think it is definitely the single most likely to make me leave it feeling good about the possibility that the world can be a better place. Movie that I've seen in recent memory or perhaps always memory. So for that alone, I kind of have to give it an A+ because it's amazing.
So I think our conversation has convinced me that I like this movie even more than I thought I did when we started. I mean, I'm going to co-sign everything. You're all correct. This is my favorite movie that I saw from 2018. It is, I am pretty strongly convinced, and I will, you know, I will make this case to anyone who asks, that it is the best superhero movie I've ever seen, and possibly, you know, maybe ever. The Black Panther issue is a good one to point out, Julia, and that's worth taking into consideration. But on balance, for me, the heart of this movie, the visual inventiveness of this movie, the focus on positive, healthy, loving relationships between all the protagonists, it just comes, it's such an achievement. It's such an amazing achievement. You know, yeah, A+, 10 web shooters out of 10, all the praise.
You heard it here first. 10 web shooters out of 10.
All right. Well, thank you, listeners, for joining us for this very special episode of At the Movies. Don't forget to check us out on Patreon for exclusive content and fun shenanigans, and review our podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen. I think that's about it, guys.
Yes. Go see Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it yet, you shouldn't be listening to this podcast by now. You should be at the theater.
Definitely.
Well, I mean, I presume they went, saw the movie, came back, and are now listening to this.
Oh, well, fine. Go see it again.
Yeah, like, it deserves another. We can go spend more money.
This movie is great! I like it! Another!
Hey, you're mixing up your Marvel properties.
And with that awkward ending and scene.
You're welcome, citizens.
Stay frosty.
I don't have a cute catchphrase yet.
It's okay, stay frosty isn't mine, it's Paul's.
If you would like to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty or find us on Twitter @skiffyandfanty, our webpage skiffyandfanty.com, or you can even send us an email @skiffyandfanny@gmail.com. The intro music for this podcast was taken from Rock Thing by Creo. You can find out more about their music on freemusicarchive.org.